Guerrilla Radio, recorded November 6, 2024. Well, last month, the Don Sturgis Inquiry reconvened in London. Sturgis was one of the littler of the little people, living until 2018 in Amesbury, Wiltshire, in southern England, who'd certainly done nothing in life to account for all the attention her death generated. Nearly 6.5 years later, how and why Don died is still of intense concern to the British establishment, because the truth of the matter could reveal the workings of Britain's deep state and its machinations to trigger a war with Russia. John Helmer's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, the lately released autobiography Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes, and Skripal in Prison, the first and perhaps only book to follow the Skripal saga from its beginnings. His most recent article at Dances with Bears on the subject is British Chemical Warfare Agent Reveals Novichok Was Not Detected in Don Sturgis and Charlie Rowley at First and Second Try, But There Was Cocaine. Today, John Helmer on the Sturgis Inquiry, the phantom elephants in the courtroom, Yulia and Sergei Skripal, how Boris Johnson knew immediately who done it, the curious and seemingly irrepressible desire of Britain's elite to ignite a global conflagration, and more. Well, welcome back to the program, John.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure. And, you know, the last time we talked in June, we've talked since, of course, but the Don Sturgis Inquiry was beginning to set up tables and chairs for the now ongoing hearings. You've written, John, several articles as it got underway last month. I've been watching the YouTube live broadcast. I wonder if you're doing the same, following the YouTube feed of this inquiry as it is ongoing.
I'm following the feed, but mostly I'm reading the transcript and the exhibits. That's the witness statements that have been written, taken by the police and by the inquiry, which come within hours of the live stream. One tends to understand more carefully the slower you read what was said, because then you can see what's missing that should have been said or asked but wasn't. So that's why I prefer to see the written transcript. But just a word to start, because we get rather technical, as an inquiry into a cause of death like this must be. Why should Canadians care exactly what's going on? Why do the British care? And in fact, the British aren't caring. The issue here is that the Novichok allegations that the British government published within days of the Skripal attack, March 4, 2018, and repeated after the collapse of Dawn Sturgis and her boyfriend on June 30, 2018, in their home nearby, the allegations have been fabricated. And the inquiry evidence is showing what the extent of the fabrication, that's a nice word for lying, has been, how it was done, and where it was located in the chemical warfare lab known as Porton Down. Lying by the British government to create these accusations against the Russian state for attacking the United Kingdom were the preliminary, the run-up to the war in the Ukraine that we've been engaged in and which we discuss since February 2022. So Canadians, North Americans, Americans need to understand that this inquiry shows how the big lie was created. Unfortunately, it also shows the total incapacity of the British mass media and the Anglo-American mass media to detect the lying, to detect the contradictions, to detect the evidence that shows the other conclusions. And even worse, the alt media have been no better. They're a very well-known alt media podcasters in England, like George Galloway. He hasn't done anything. The podcasters, the alt media analysts, have done next to nothing to examine what the big lie in this case is being revealed to have been.
Well, the first big lie, I would argue, would be the lie of omission. And when you say that there's not a lot of interest being shown on this side of the Atlantic where I am, or in Britain itself, I think that was a design. This is 6 years down the road. With so much going on week in and week out, the news, the torrent of news and events unfolding, and I don't think any more so than in this last year, I think people can be forgiven. But that was by design, that this inquiry was booted first a few years down the road, and then secondly kicked again to now. Why is the inquiry happening now, John? I mean, was this as far as they could kick it down the road? Because I'm certain that if they could, they would have booted it down into 2030 or into the distant mists of time.
The present proceeding is called a public inquiry. When there's a suspicious death in our country, so Canada, the United States, or Great Britain, when a suspicious death occurs, the coroner with jurisdiction over the body must make a coronial investigation. And under the law of England, that has very strict rules about making evidence public. Because the Skripals were deemed to be, Sergei Skripal in particular, deemed to be an asset to MI6, the British Secret Intelligence Service, a great deal of secrecy has descended immediately over what happened. As the attempt was made by MI6 and Portendown and the other agencies of the MOD, the Ministry of Defence of England, and Whitehall and the Prime Ministry, to create an allegation against Russia, so that the secrecy requirement took the entire evidence of the case out of the normal coroner's investigation in court. First, a Wiltshire County coroner named David Ridley, and then a federal or a British, a central government coroner named Hallett, I think Dame Hallett, was appointed to replace Ridley. And then, but the rules of inquest would have required evidence not to be kept secret. To keep the secrets of the state, the inquiries were turned into a public inquiry in which a great deal of secrecy can be applied, and that's what's happened. The judge appointed to be in charge of the inquiry, the public inquiry, and that's an ironic term because the public inquiry actually turns out to be far more secretive than an inquest would have been. The judge presiding is a man called Anthony Hughes, titled Lord Hughes of Ombersley, a retired appeal court judge. And he's been proceeding not for the full 6 years, the full, I think, 2 years now. The first 4 years were Ridley and Hallett and a court case in which a lawyer named Michael Mansfield, representing the Sturgis family survivors and the boyfriend named Charles Rowley, attempted to challenge Ridley's findings. And his case, his motivation is also driving what's happening and causing the delay. Mansfield wants a multi-million pound payout on the allegation that the British government had been careless and negligent in dealing with what he says was the known threat of a Russian chemical warfare attack, that by failing to do enough to stop the Russians with their alleged Novichok poison, the British government is liable to compensate Sturgis's family and Rowley to the tune of millions of pounds. The British government doesn't want to pay out. The British government wants to show that it did everything possible, diligent, proper, and careful. So it's been running a parallel effort to block Mansfield's allegations. Both sets of allegations, Mansfield for the multi-million pound negligence claim and the British government's claim that the Russians did it and we knew all along, but we weren't careless. That combination has caused an expensive delay as the preliminary hearings that Hughes has been running, and I've been following those and reporting those, set out the ground rules to make sure that both the British government's official narrative and the British government's defense against the negligence claim would be advanced at the end. And at the same time, nothing true could be presented. So the Skripals had to be, Yulia and Sergei, allegedly alive, had to be included as what is known as IPs, interested parties, with rights to ask questions during the preliminary hearings and to testify in the open court. Well, as we've also reported, the Skripals have been presented with first one lawyer named Adam Chapman, a solicitor, who said nothing in the court for the entire period in which he was engaged and present. Then another barrister named Hoborn, and then finally a barrister representing them in this stage of the proceeding named Andrew Deacon. But those lawyers have never said anything. They've never asked questions. Instead, the Skripals have been ruled out by Hughes from being allowed to testify on the preposterous notion that it serves their security and safety by having them not appear. So they've produced written statements, which are hocus pocus that the police invented, that the MI6 created, and contain serious flaws that I've been trying to expose. When you add all of what I've just said up, you can see that the British have been stumbling along with contradictions, but with clear aims, and that's what's taken 6 years.
Well, Michael Mansfield, the lawyer for the Sturgis family, he's doing the British government a great service by delaying this, sending this case so far down the road. The secrecy revolving around the whole case depends on a connection being real and true, that Sturgis and Rowley, what befell them is a connection to the attempt on the lives using the Novichok poisoning, as alleged by the British government, against the Skripals. But that in itself is certainly not a given. In fact, it's a pretty thin gruel to even make a connection between the two. Do you want to talk, John, about, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, and you've written a book, and I'll remind our listeners, Skripal in Prison by John Helmer is the definitive tome up until this point, at least, on the Skripal case. But this connection being drawn, how I would venture spurious it is that Don Sturgis's death has anything at all to do with what happened to the Skripals some months before.
Well, it's very difficult to capture such a big case with such a lot of small print in a way that listeners can understand as clearly as we need to, how this big lie was created and how the little lies have sewn together to make the big one. What I can say is that, to answer your question quickly, Chris, first, the Skripals may not be alive. I believe Sergei Skripal is dead. Yulia Skripal may be alive, but both of them are definitely incommunicado and not allowed to prove that they are talking, or that they instructed the people, the lawyers, allegedly representing them. We now know for sure that the British government suppressed their right to speak, suppressed their right to express consent to what was being done. We now know that because one of the doctors attending one of the specialists, an anesthesiologist named Cockcroft, testified last week that he was tending Yulia Skripal on the 8th of March, 4 days after she and her father had been admitted to hospital as a result of the so-called poison attack, and she had woken up. She had come out of a coma, was, in Cockcroft's professional opinion, highly competent neurologically, able to communicate, able to see, signal, squeeze hands, or respond positively to all the neurological tests that everybody's familiar with, and that she understood question and answer. I've reported that in a recent article. What then happened was that Cockcroft was ordered by the director of the hospital, who knows nothing about that line of medicine. She's a gastroenterologist. Her name's Blanchard, Christine Blanchard. She ordered Cockcroft to get out of the intensive care unit and threatened him with further punishment if he spoke a word about what Yulia had said, and to basically remove, Blanchard removed Cockcroft from anything to do with the Skripals, and ensure through a blanket of security plus threats of professional sanctions against the one doctor who knew that Yulia Skripal had woken up. Now, why is that important in this case? Because the British government testified days later in the High Court of London on oath in front of a judge that the Skripals were unconscious, in comas, maybe not likely to come out of them, in order to allow the Organization for Prevention of Chemical Weapons to take their blood in order to produce an international conclusion that they'd been hit by Novichok. In other words, we now know from Cockcroft's testimony, the British government was lying in court 2 weeks later about the condition of the Skripals. We now know from Cockcroft's testimony that the British government imposed sedation on the Skripals so they couldn't talk if they were visited by international experts. And we also know from the medical records that on March 21 or 22, that's however many days since March 8, 13, tracheostomies were applied to both Sergei Skripal and Yulia Skripal for no obvious medical purpose. So they had tubes inserted into their throats to make speech very difficult. They were kept in sedation to make them unconscious. We now know that's what the British government was doing to the Skripals 4 days after they were allegedly poisoned and admitted to hospital, and lying. The British government continued to lie at the time and punish any doctor or nurse who knew otherwise. Now, we know all of that then. The lying about the Skripals, the suppression of their ability to talk, has continued right through today, when Hughes, the purported judge in charge, says that they can't appear and say what they need to say to tell their story of what happened, because it might adversely affect their security. In other words, they're still in sedation. It's a form of court-ordered sedation in which Sergei Skripal may no longer be alive. Now, well, that's the extent of the cover-up. That's the degree to which the British will go to keep the Skripals out of the case, the degree to which they keep identifying poor Dawn Sturgis is a victim of the same stuff, can be investigated when we look at the preposterous notion of what the weapon was and how another one was found. And well, I can go into the detail.
Yeah, well, let's do that. And the article that you're citing right now is Novichok's show trial suffers sudden death shock from doctors' testimony that government officials sedated the Scripples to stop them talking, which in itself is gruesome when you think about doctors being used in such a way, and all the more for Stephen Cockcroft to come forward, Dr. Stephen Cockcroft to come forward against all of his the warnings of Blanchard, as you mentioned, who's his boss, but also all the other doctors that have been cowed into silence. And it draws into question whether there was any Novichok poisoning at all, which would affect the Sturgis trial for sure. The fact that they don't know each other or there's no connections between Don Sturgis and the Skripals is the whole thing that I'm getting at. And the secrecy, which is kind of belied by the live streaming in scare quotes, because they've got a kill switch, a 10 minutes kill switch in the court should somebody reveal something, which seems so to me that they're trying to go to the moon to prove that they're being forthcoming and public, the inquiry in the government is. But when that's not the case, as you described, the Skripals themselves not even being allowed, as I recall from our previous conversation, to submit written testimony or even the testimony that had been gotten from them years ago before they were entirely disappeared. But yeah, let's talk about this, the spurious connection that the government created or proposes that connects the Skripals, the so-called Russian assassins, and Dawn Sturgis and her boyfriend, Charlie Rowley.
I'll be quick about this. If you're not British, you don't know, maybe not familiar with the particular type of door, front door, and its handle and how it locks, which is common in England, but not common abroad. The front door handle of the Skripal house in Salisbury is where the British Secret Service, police, Prime Minister Theresa May, then Foreign Minister Boris Johnson, allege two Russian agents sprayed a toxic chemical they called Novichok, and that entered the skin of the Skripals later. That handle is a locking mechanism which you activate by putting a key in the lock aperture below the handle. And then you, I've forgotten which, I've used to use it in my cottage. You either bring the handle up to complete the locking mechanism, or you bring it down to the horizontal position. I can't remember which, but I say this because you can see the handle in all the photographs of the so-called crime scene. You can see that the police are guarding the handle for several days, were not wearing protective equipment, and yet that was allegedly the, let's call it the murder weapon, that conveyed the lethal spray to the Skripals when they left the house, got in their car, and drove to town, okay, where later, 2.5 hours later, this most lethal, quick-acting chemical poison felled them. The preposterousness of the door handle being touched by two people at the same time is obvious. It's not possible that two different people lock a door of that kind. Not possible. You don't, it can't be done.
And yeah, yet but what if one locks the door and then they get in the car and the other one says, oh, can I have a cigarette? And they say, yeah, sure. And they touch hands or something. Would that,
well, you know, any possibilities of would have to be remotely possible. Mm. But the two things arise. One is the Skripals aren't allowed to say. Second, there are no witnesses that the two Russian agents came within a kilometer of that door handle to spray.
Well, John, the Porton Down, one of the Porton Down experts, I think it was yesterday or possibly the day before, when asked about why none of the ambulance and the attendants and the people in the hospital didn't get sick from contact and why none was apparent, said that, oh, well, and I'll paraphrase, humans are kind of like a human sponge. And so they would have absorbed the Skripals in their bodies. And so they wouldn't be able to infect the ambulance attendants or the people in the hospital or even passersby that went to their aid when they collapsed in a public place. So maybe that explains why there wasn't cross-contamination.
It contradicts everything the British government said they did to protect the population of Salisbury. In other words, if that's the case, if you accept that the slowness that had to be explained for the collapse of the Skripals is that it took a long time to penetrate their skin, and that by the time it had penetrated, it wasn't a contamination for anybody nearby, not anybody coming into contact with their body fluids, their skin, their bodies, and so on. All of that defies the what the British government then did, putting people in these highly protective suits and masks and helmets and so forth, and in order to protect themselves from the contamination. It contradicts. The contradictions, however, have never been asked or not asked in the proceeding, because there's no statement, no questioning by the Skripal lawyer, Deacon. His mouth firmly shut.
Well, our mouths won't. Oh, sorry, John. Your second point.
The second point is that there's another contradiction. Because the door handle theory of the crime was difficult and preposterous, the British came up with another corpse and another weapon. So the death of Dawn Sturgis on June 30th at her house, after the consumption of serious drugs, which I'll come to in a minute, at that stage, a new weapon was found, and that's the alleged perfume bottle filled with Novichok in a form of an atomizer spray. Okay. That weapon had to be found, and a body had to be found to make the Skripal events several weeks earlier look more credible, and that's what the British have done. However, in finding the body of Dawn Sturgis, nobody, not the police, not the ambulance men, found the perfume bottle on the kitchen table where the police allegedly found it 11 days later, although the police and the ambulance men all found, as they've testified, drug paraphernalia in the kitchen cupboards, on the kitchen surfaces. They found syringes prepared for injecting an illegal drug. They found evidence of drug use, illicit drug use, in the kitchen.
I'll stop you there. Well, let's get to that in a second. I want to take a break first. We'll break here. We'll come back and we'll bring the rest of this sordid tale, or at least the tale that the British government would have you believe, after this minute break.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Kids in Gaza being killed every day by snipers and by drones or by fighter jets. I don't know what to do with the knowledge coming from the TV set. I hear the woman speaking, and all that comes to mind is imagining the scene among the rubble I might find. If my family were in that building as it fell to the ground, and all the pieces of body parts that would then be found. It's enough to drive you crazy. Now I'm completely mad, just from hearing the news day after day and being someone's dad. just from hearing all the excuses about how it's justified. Talk about the collateral damage, how all those babies died.